why character really does matter, no matter how you want to nuance it. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is my co-chairman, co-host, vice-chairman, excuse me, I just elevated you, Chuck, a good friend and fellow analyst, Chuck Michaelis.
Yes, I happily accept that crown. Oops, it's been taken away again. Oh, well.
Exactly. Well, you know, those temporal things are fleeting. Wait, yesterday, Chuck, we started talking about an article by Dennis Prager, who's a nationally syndicated conservative columnist, whose article of the 6th of December, What Does Adultery Tell Us About Character, seems to have created some kind of a firestorm. I know it created firestorms in our minds because we read his article and said, hey, you know what? He's trying to equivocate here. He's trying to basically minimize the impact of a person's sin just because they run for public office. Now, I guess the question is, Charles, okay, let's turn this around a little bit because the thought occurred to me, would we feel differently? And the way Prager is saying we should feel differently, that if the man is honest, and which I question if he's committing adultery, he's not honest, but if he's a great man and blah, 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 and a wonderful leader, should we be so quick to condemn him if he had an indiscretion, as long as he wasn't indiscreet about it? Now, that was the other thing Prager talked about, was the only reason it would raise to a level of moral opprobrium to him is if the person was indiscreet about his affair. So as long as he kept it quiet, it was okay. Let me ask him this question. If his rabbi or a pastor or a priest was having a sexual liaison with someone who was not his spouse, he's a leader. He's an honorable man, an honest man, we assume. Should we then say, well, as long as you keep it discreet there, parson, we're okay with you going ahead and sleeping with this woman who's not your wife? Well, you see, because if the only qualifications for moral outrage in relation to adultery is if it's indiscreet, then I guess Prager shouldn't feel all that, concerned if his own rabbi is indulging in the activities that he seems to want to overlook in politicians.
Well, okay, let's look at one of the readers of this article commented. And I think this is a really important comment. He asks, why stop with adultery? If adultery doesn't matter, then why would anything that does not interfere with a successful administration or individual be taken into consideration? If success, the principle of evolution, is the measure of all things, then what does it matter in the long run whether we set moral standards and expect moral examples to be set? The standard that we choose will be the standard we get, and the only standard that will win in the end will be whatever wins, however it wins, because success is the standard. The history of the world is that the immoral succeed, so why bother to be righteous? You can vote for the candidate that is more likely to help you to succeed, but be careful what you ask for, because you might just get it.
And I think that's pretty wise thoughts coming from that response. But you know what? With those type of responses, Prager realized that, oh, okay, I need to clarify. So he responded back this week and with a follow-up article on townhall.com called Adultery, Character, and Politics, My Responses. And Chuck, you know the old saying is, once you find yourself that you've dug yourself a hole, what's the first thing you're supposed to do?
Stop digging.
Stop digging. Nobody told this to Dennis Prager. What he did was he went and got a bigger shovel, and he started going faster. And because his second article really is digging a hole I don't think that he can get out of.
Yeah, I think he went and found a steam shovel.
Well, he could. And honestly, Chuck, I think it probably wouldn't have been so bad if it hadn't have been for the fact that in his mea culpa here, he decided to defend himself. And he defended himself by saying, wait a minute, I am a religious conservative, and my primary concern is morality. By morality, I mean issues of good and evil. Well, I think that's what we all mean. Right. I am also concerned with the issue of sin, but sin and evil are not identical. See, now that's where he starts getting a little on the edge. And he says, all evil is sin, but not all sins are evil. So are there good sins, Chuck?
He has not lost his footing. He's in headlong tumble over the cliff.
Yeah, I think so. And then he uses an example, which I'm not going to repeat here.
No.
Because honestly, I don't agree with him.
He's absolutely wrong.
He basically says taking God's name in vain, or using the word God for no religious purpose, or taking his name in vain, is sinful. But to regard saying something in that vein, and we can imagine what he's talking about, it as evil, is to trivialize evil. Well, no, that's setting up a false dichotomy via Dennis Prager, because the issues of a man's mouth come from the issues of his heart. And therefore, if his heart is boiling forth things that would otherwise be considered sinful, it's also because his heart would be considered evil. As the scripture clearly states in Jeremiah, the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can know it? You know, in the Old Testament, before God decided to eradicate the entire face of the planet except for Noah and his family, it was because the thoughts of man were evil continually. The thoughts of man's heart were evil continually. So therefore, that sin is an outworking of the evil that's in your heart. And so I disagree totally with Prager, and I think what he's trying to do is set up this straw man so he can knock it down. And what he says to follow up, which I kind of laughed about, he says, above all, I seek to clarify moral issues. It's everyone's duty, religious or secular, to strive for moral clarity. Well, I agree with that, but I think, Dennis, you're striving in the wrong direction, because what you're doing is creating moral relativism by saying as long as a man's indiscreet about it, his adultery, his infidelity, his violation of the Ten Commandments, and not just the one on adultery, but multiple commandments in that are all packed into that sexual choice, shouldn't disqualify him from being the leader of the free world, the president of the United States. And I would say that God has even standards, and we've talked about them on this program before, ladies and gentlemen. You can go back to our archives if you want to hear one of those programs, about what God's standards are for men who we put in authority over us. Men who fear God, hating covetousness, who love truth. How can you fear God if you're going to violate his commandments willfully? How can you hate covetousness when you're coveting another man's wife or a woman who's not your own wife? And how can you love truth if you're carrying on something that's violating your covenant with your wife and keeping it secret? Honestly, well, I think they strike out on all three instances, Chuck.
Let's talk about sin for a minute. The first thing when I read this, I ran over, since I'm studying the Westminster Confession, because I now attend a confessional church, and we really do need to know what our confession says. So I went to chapter 6, which is of the fall of man, of sin, and of the punishment thereof. And I went to the subheading, the subquestion 6, and it says this: every sin, both original and actual, being a transgression of the righteous law of God, and contrary thereunto, doth in its own nature bring guilt upon the sinner, whereby he is bound over to the wrath of God and curse of the law, and so made subject to death with all misery, spiritual, temporal, and eternal. That, to me, doesn't sound like that there are two classes of sin. It sounds to me like there's one kind of sin, and it's all evil. It's all contrary to God's will and his character.
Well, and if we agree partway with Prager that all evil is sin, then according to studied wisdom of the writers of that confession, all sin is evil.
So, yes, exactly.
So, and therefore, I think Prager, who's trying to, as he says, seek for more, to clarify moral issues, is doing nothing else than muddying the waters even further. So, in other words, as he's digging his hole, he's throwing the dirt out into the stream and muddying the water.
He has committed the fallacy of equivocation here. He has tried to make, with this false definition, he has essentially just muddied what sin is. He has used the equivocation fallacy to try to make his argument for him.
Mm-hmm.
So you redefine sin, get everybody to agree to it, because actually, you know, when you look at that and you kind of look at it really closely, and you're not looking at it real closely, you're kind of skimming it. Yeah, okay, all evil may be sin, but not all sin is evil. Kind of sounds okay to the modern mind. But it's drivel. It's drivel when you understand what sin is, and that's the problem. God has defined sin, and what Dennis Prager is trying to do is say, well, God's definition, it doesn't really fit the modern world. We have to redefine it so that we can, apparently, so we can give all guys like Newt Gingrich and a pass. Now, one of the problems that you and I both talked about off air was the fact that there are other politicians who I don't think Dennis Prager has been so sanguine about forgiving about adultery in the past. For instance, you brought up the example of John Edwards. And in fact, if you'll recall, you were absolutely correct that Prager had said something about he didn't care about whether the men committed adultery, just whether they did it discreetly or not.
Right.
Well, the fact is that John Kerry carried on his affair with the woman who eventually sued him for paternity while his wife was dying of cancer. And he did it very discreetly until someone figured out that it was a problem and actually stole some videotapes that they had made while they were in the act. And then it became an issue. If you recall, he denied and denied and denied and denied until there was no denial anymore. So, yeah, I don't think, as I recall, Prager was none too forgiving of John Edwards at the time. So apparently it depends what your party label is on whether or not you get a pass on adultery.
Yeah, well, there's another big issue that comes up, Chuck, that I really want to touch on, because it was in how he's trying to nuance, and in his word, nuance, a certain issues. And the second article, he starts digging in, and he says, well, I responded that in general, issues related to others, marriages, divorces, and infidelities are too complex interruptions about a person. Well, okay, I'm going to agree with him in part. No one should draw immediate conclusions about anything until we look at it through the lens of God's word. But can you draw conclusions about a person and their character by their actions, by the situations that they put themselves in, by the issues related to their marriages, divorces, and infidelities? Oh, yes, you can. As a matter of fact, we're commanded to do so. Now, I know the first thing we're going to hear from people is, it says to judge not lest ye be judged. It also says, and Christ said this directly, by their fruits ye shall know them. And the Bible talks about whether you have good fruit or whether you have bad fruit. Matter of fact, one of my children's favorite sections of the Bible comes out of Jeremiah, where it's talking about the naughty figs that are so naughty they can't be eaten. In other words, evil works, the fruit of evil. And Dennis, you're going to have to be a better fruit inspector and stop playing politics with this, because adultery is a sign of a character flaw in a candidate and an elected official or any type of leader.
Well, Barry, one of the things, you know, that we do at Camp American is try to teach how people how to think critically. And one of the problems we've got here is this article is almost a workshop in and of itself in logical fallacy.
Yes, it is.
For instance, Prager tries this one on for size. Most readers who commented on websites or who wrote to me directly agreed with me, but a significant percentage did not. Okay, most readers agreed with me. What does that mean? Jump on the bandwagon, come along with the majority of us, and agree with me because, you know, you're on the... Yeah, there's a significant number of fringe commenters, but they're on the fringe. There's an underlying current here that anyone who doesn't agree with him is basically... They're just this fringe element who really shouldn't be listened to.
Exactly.
And some of them attributed a host of motives to my writing on this issue, from personal to political. But the fact is that the column had nothing to do with my life or with support for any particular politician. I'm sorry, that is not even a fallacy. That is an outright lie.
Well, and honestly, Chuck, I mean, even if we don't go into whether or not Prager is stumping for any particular candidate, which I think he is too, but let's look at some of the things that he said here. And ladies and gentlemen, I mean, this is, Chuck's right, this is a workshop in how to spot logical fallacies and arguments. What he does is he sets up by hand selecting a couple of the responses that he gets, one that completely agrees with his position, and he starts with that, and then a second one that he's using to play what we call the emotion card. If it's from a man whose wife had dementia, he had no intimacy for over a decade, and he had an 8-year affair while she was sick and with dementia, and he did it because it kept him sane and it kept him there to be sure she had the best care. Well, she's now living with her sister, not him, and without divorcing her because of issues with regard to health insurance. I felt I handled it the best I could. Now, Prager then uses that as a cudgel to say, what do those who are so certain that adultery tells us all we need to know in order to judge a person's character say to these people? And he's like, I'm incredulous at the callousness of those who would counsel the man who wrote the above that if he cannot control himself, he should divorce his demented wife. That's the whole point. Nobody has done that.
Exactly.
Ms. Prager, you just now threw in a tangential argument, a non sequitur argument to try to draw people off. What we have to really get down to is the fact that this man has admitted that his bond with his wife was so based on what he got out of it that when she couldn't provide intimacy for him anymore, then he needed to keep his sanity and give himself a reason for why he needed to stay with his wife by violating their marriage vows. In other words, it's open to the idea of two becoming one flesh. What happened to the concept that Christ even said that we are supposed to deny ourselves daily, that we are supposed to seek good for the other person, that to do unto others as you would have them do unto you? Dennis, well, I think your biblical knowledge is needing a little help here, because what you're trying to do is saying, okay, I am going to basically paint a broad brush that anybody who would say that this man, that his actions of love for his wife by keeping her around while he's fulfilling his own personal needs so that she could stay on his health insurance, that those works outweighed his actions.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's works righteous, which is, talk about moral clarity, that's showing a true lack of moral clarity to say that, you know, your works mean more than your heart.
So much for in sickness and in health.
Yeah, so much for that.
I hate to tell you this, but we are out of time. So join us tomorrow at noon, and we look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for being with us.